Chapter 8.
The Blessed Isles?
Yes!
Declared Viego, pacing back and forth, gravel crunching under his slippered feet.
They are real. I'm convinced of it.
They were in one of the many cloistered gardens within the palace. Callista had ushered Viego out of the royal bedchamber, fearing he would wake the queen with his sudden exuberance. It was called the Queen's Garden, and it was a place of serenity and privacy, a hidden oasis that Callista had always loved. Surrounded by walls and columns, with a gently bubbling fountain in its center, it had lovingly tended flower beds replete with blooms from all across the known world. Brightly colored flit dragons fed on their nectar with long tongues, tiny wings humming as clouds rolled lazily across the blue sky. Callista watched Viego in growing alarm. He looked like a madman, dressed in little more than a nightrobe, his hair disheveled, and gesturing wildly as he raved on about the Blessed Isles.
"And you say this came to you in a dream?"
she said, trying to keep the skepticism from her voice.
"Not a dream, a vision sent to me by the revered ancestors."
"Viego."
"No, Carl, it was a vision. I have spoken to the high priests, and they have confirmed it as such."
Callista's brow creased.
"Why is the priesthood indulging and feeding Viego's fantasies? That won't help him move on." "But the Blessed Isles are just a myth."
"Yes, I mean no,"
Viego declared, stopping his pacing and pointing at her in excitement.
"I thought so too, but I've been reading everything I can find in the archives, and it is my belief that the adepts of the Isles propagated the myth themselves to keep outsiders away. They're real, and that is where a cure for Isolde will be found."
Callista sighed.
"I know the story, Viego. It is said that upon the Blessed Isles there is a wellspring where life-giving waters flow, able to cure any mortal wound. But that's all it is, a story. It's a tale told to children, nothing more."
"Ah, but I have found proof the Blessed Isles are real, Carl,"
said Viego, clasping her shoulders. His eyes were wild, and he was shaking with frenzied belief.
"Isolde will be saved."
Callista took a deep breath. She could see that there would be no arguing with him.
"Show me."
The king's research had been moved into the drawing room next to the royal bedchamber, laid out across desks and side tables. Viego stood in the doorway, looking back and forth between his sleeping wife in the royal bedchamber and Callista and Nuño, who were studying the various accounts, maps, diaries, and histories spread out before them.
"Well, you see it, don't you?"
Callista glanced at Nuño, who gave an almost imperceptible shrug.
"I don't know. There are a lot of contradictions."
"But too many details line up for it to be a coincidence,"
declared Viego. He strode over to a side table, gesturing emphatically.
"Look here, in the account of this fellow,
Zulan, Zillion, whatever.
This is translated from the original Acathian script. He speaks of visiting the city of Helia. He writes of his time among its scholars, libraries, and secrets. And that name, Helia, it comes up again and again. Here, and here, and here,"
he added, pointing at different open books and scrolls.
"And look, Helia appears on this map, over 100 years after these other mentions. It's only a fragment, but correlate that with our own maps, and it places the Blessed Isles somewhere around here."
Callista and Nuño squinted at the location that Viego had indicated on a contemporary map.
"In the middle of the Eternal Ocean."
"Yes, they are out there, and they have the secret that will cure Isolde."
It was the most energized Callista had seen Viego in some time, and it reminded her of when he was a child, getting deeply enthused about one thing or another, then turning his focus onto something else. She'd always found his boundless enthusiasm for his latest obsession somewhat contagious, but this theory reeked of desperation. She had no desire to take the wind out of his sails, however, particularly when this was the first break from his dark despair.
"Our ships have plied those waters for a long time, Viego. I'm sorry, but I think we would have heard if they'd come across the fabled Blessed Isles.
Viego looked at her with frustration and gave an exasperated growl before turning to his advisor.
Nunyo, tell me all these connections are not convincing.
Nunyo rubbed his wrinkled forehead.
It isn't beyond the realm of possibility,
he offered, pawing through the leaves of an ancient text.
See? Even old Nunyo agrees with me.
Well, young king, I wouldn't say I agree with your hypothesis just yet. But if you take out the more fanciful aspects of these tales, the stories of undersea empires, of fights with demigods that fell from the heavens and such, then it could point toward an island chain out there where this Helia might be.
It does,
said Viego, his voice rising in excitement. He glanced back to see if he had woken Isolde, then continued more quietly.
And the more I research, the more I'm convinced that they are there.
But my king, if this is true, then it appears that no one has seen the Blessed Isles, or at least written of them in centuries. It's like they just dropped off the map.
Or sank beneath the waves.
Which is why I had the shipmaster's office bring me the logs and navigational charts of all the vessels crossing the Eternal Ocean for the last 50 years.
Said Viego, gesturing to a pallet stacked high with wooden boxes, each meticulously labeled.
Amazing what records are kept!
Nunyo hissed through his teeth, clearly impressed.
Ah, that's why you requested the assistance of the Temple Disciples.
To help scour through these records and charts, yes. And from the information they gleaned, I had the Royal Cartographer draft this.
With a flourish, he rolled out a new map, hand-drawn, onto fresh vellum.
Who knew we even had a royal cartographer?
I knew.
Anyway, I scared the man half to death when I knocked on his door in the early hours this morning. But he does good work. Look.
The map showed Camavor to the east, as well as the roughly sketched-out archipelago of Ionia to the north, and to the west, the eastern edge of Valoran. In its northern reaches, that land was icy and wild, with no real civilization, while the rest of it was a mass of squabbling tribes and barbarians. To the south was Shirima, dominated by sand and with largely impenetrable, savage jungles to its east. The Eternal Ocean stretched between Camavor and those distant lands, a great unbroken expanse that took weeks of sailing to traverse. Few islands offered any respite during that voyage, other than the small chain known as the Serpent Isles. All the major trade routes and sea lanes trafficked by Camavor's fleet were marked on the map. It was a spiderweb of intersecting lines, scores of them. And in their center, where a spider would have crouched, there was nothing.
Why is there that gap there?
Why, indeed?
It interrupts the most direct route to several of these locations.
Callista frowned, tracing the lines with her finger.
Is there some danger that our ships avoid? A maelstrom, perhaps?
The logs of those who have found themselves in that region speak of getting turned around in an unnatural fog, their navigation tools failing. Here, look.
He said, moving to the stack of boxes. He opened a crate, rifled through it, then produced a tiny leather-bound logbook. He flicked to a page that he'd marked earlier and cleared his throat.
We found ourselves adrift, becalmed, and confused, and visibility was poor. When we were finally able again to see the stars, we were many leagues north of where we should have been, and sailing in a different direction, though there was no noticeable current or wind.
He looked at his audience, eyebrows raised expectantly.
So that is where you think the Blessed Isles are hidden?
That is where I am convinced they are.
Callista stared down at the map, considering.
Let's say they do exist. What makes you think Isolde's cure will be found there?
Viego rolled his eyes and gave another growl of frustration.
There is usually a measure of truth, even in the most fanciful tales. If we were to accept the possibility that these mythic islands are hidden where our king suggests, then it is not an overlarge leap to venture that the stories of how they're a place of healing might hold a grain of truth as well.
Callista wasn't convinced.
This feels like false hope, Viego. I don't think it wise to believe there is any salvation to be found on these mythical isles.
Viego sighed, and the feverish enthusiasm that had been fueling him began to dissipate. He sat down on an ornate desk chair, the seat cushioned with plush burgundy velvet, and motioned at the books, maps, and charts.
It might be the only chance she has. Nothing else is working.
Again, guilt struck Callista like a twisting knife to the guts.
This is my fault.
She glanced over at the old advisor.
It can't make anything worse by trying to find them,
Nunyo said, shrugging. Callista shot him an angry glare. What was he thinking? As tragic as it was, Viego needed to accept the way things were, not pin his hopes on some desperate quest that would likely lead to failure.
Viego, this is folly. I love Isolde like a sister and would do anything to see her recover, but we have to face the truth, and that is that she is unlikely to be healed. I know it is hard. But if these are truly her final days as the physicians believe, then your place is at her side, not delving through the archives seeking some desperate secret cure.
Viego looked hurt, and Callista sighed. She didn't want to upset him, but he needed to accept the way things were. She placed her hand upon his arm, hoping to soften her words and help him understand that she only had his best interests at heart.
I'm sorry, Viego.
He shrugged her hand away, anger blazing in his eyes.
I thought you, of all people, would have understood.
Viego.
He pointed a finger at her face.
No! I have heard your counsel, and I reject it.
But if you...
Enough! I have made up my mind. The cure is there. I know it. I want our fastest ship sailing on the next tide. Nunyo, see it done!
The advisor bowed, even as Callista's face burned.
It will be as you order, my king.
Viego looked back at Callista. His anger had already disappeared.
It is likely that there will be those at court who will speak against this decision. But I can rely on your support, can't I, Cal?
She sighed.
Of course. But if this really is the course of action you are set upon, whom will you send?
It has to be someone I trust. Most of the nobles think I was a fool for marrying Isolde in the first place, so I have no faith in them. And the loyalty of the knightly orders can be fickle.
Who then?
Lord Hecarim. The Iron Order's loyalty is bound to the throne with Callista's betrothal.
We are not married yet.
No, but we could bring that forward, as Hecarim has been urging,
said Viego, waving his hand.
He has? That is the first I have heard of it,
said Callista, raising her eyebrows.
You could be wed tomorrow, if needed.
Viego continued, ignoring her.
It could be arranged, could it not, Nunyo?
It could, Lord King,
the old advisor said, casting a sidelong glance at Callista. Viego and his chief advisor began speaking of the logistics that would be involved, but Callista hardly heard them. She thought of how conquered nations had burned, pillaged, and brutalized by the knightly orders. In the past, the Iron Order had been a part of that savagery, and it was only the express order of Viego and the presence of Isolde that had restrained them at Santoros. But now, if even a quarter of what was written about the Blessed Isles was true, then it was a place of tremendous wealth. She could almost hear the screams already.
Do not send the Iron Order. Their place is here, protecting the kingdom.
Then?
I will go.
Helia, the Blessed Isles. Urlok Grail could not remember the last time he'd truly laughed. But discovering the long-dead corpse of a master of Helia in one of the deeper vaults below the city made him laugh until he cried. The body was little more than a desiccated husk, bedecked in robes, slowly turning to dust. Strings of hair still clung to the master's scalp. One of the man's ankles was broken, wrenched at an awkward angle. A lantern lay nearby, all of its oil burned away. He surmised the old fool had tripped and broken his leg and was unable to get back out before his light gave out. How long would he have lasted before madness and thirst claimed him? The masters despised and looked down upon threshers like Grail, so to think of one of them spending their last days crawling around in the darkness was sublime. It was hard to gauge how long the corpse had been down here. 20 years? 50, perhaps? The dryness of this particular section of the vaults would have slowed the decomposition, so it could have been closer to a century. The fact that the man was a master was instantly apparent, as evidenced by the intricate, corroded sigil hung around his neck. It came apart in Grail's hand, and the pale stone set within slipped loose.
A keystone.
It was roughly a hand span long, inscribed with runes, and curiously warm to the touch. Only the masters of the Scintillant Tower were given these stones. He cradled it, relishing its feel, before slipping it into his robes. This section of the vaults had clearly not been entered in decades. His newly acquired prefect's keys granted him a far wider hunting ground than he'd had before, and access to some of the deepest, oldest vaults beneath Helia.
What were you doing down here, all alone, away from prying eyes?
Grail asked the skeleton. It was only then that he realized there was something clutched in the corpse's hand. He had to break the fingers to peel them loose. They snapped like dry twigs to reveal a tarnished old key, greened with verdigris, its bow in the shape of a staring eye. It quickly found its way onto one of Grail's chains. It took him several hours to find the lock that was the key's match. And behind that door, he found the book that would change everything.